Are you ever going to fix that smoke detector, or am I going to hear it until I die?
Probably till you die.
You know, I would like you to fix it because I would not like you to get caught in a fire in the house without a smoke
detector. Well, the fact that it's beeping indicates the battery's not completely dead yet.
That's right. Yes, I understand that, but it means it will imminently be. So, what, do I have to remember the next time I stop hearing, I say, okay, Sam, it finally died. Now what?
Yeah, probably. See, let's get started. The thing is, it's the one where we have to buy a damn ladder to get to it.
Yeah, it's your safety!
There are other smoke detectors in the house.
And you have child!
Yeah.
Children, and the wife, the thing!
Yeah, true.
If it was just you, I'd let you, fuck it, you know, you could jump out a window, who the fuck cares?
Oops, wait, I didn't mean to do that, hold on. Okay, now, who the hell is that? Okay, here we go, it's weird, it gave me two, I don't understand that, but, okay, here we go. Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. It's Sunday, March 25th, 2012, as we record this. I'm Sam Minter, and Yvonne Bo is here. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
Hello. So we have an exciting show going on. We're, of course, going to do the standard election update.
Exciting or exciting?
Probably both.
Okay.
Then we're going to talk about, how do you pronounce his first name, Trevin?
Traven. Traven Martin. I wrote down the spelling. T-R-A-Y-V-O-N.
Yeah, Traven Martin, the kid who got killed down in Florida, right?
Down in Florida, and just near Orlando.
Yep, and then there's a few little Apple things to talk about. And then we've got Dick Cheney, who... You know,
Darth Vader?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
Anyway, anything exciting go on this week that you want to talk about before we dive into the election, Yvonne?
Anything exciting? Other than me complaining about you not changing your battery on your smoke detector until, you know, but, no, not really.
Let's dive into the election.
Let's dive into the election.
I'm getting bored.
Let's dive. Dive. Okay, so.
We had Louisiana.
Santorum won Louisiana.
But it makes no fucking difference.
Right.
I mean, here's the thing. I actually posted my update to my blog minutes before we started our podcast.
Well, you did a good analysis on the charts during the week, okay? Which, basically, if I condense it down to the summary of it, was that after you compensated for the number of delegates that we have this year, which are different than last year, and a calendar, that basically Romney is really on the same track as McCain was.
He's a little bit behind, but not a huge amount
but
behind.
But
actually, I was going to update that to include Illinois and Louisiana. The analysis you're talking about was before both Illinois and Louisiana, so it's a little bit out of date now. And
so he may be better because...
I believe he'll actually fall further behind McCain.
You think so?
Yeah. So I don't want to say that because I haven't done that analysis yet. I was going to do it right after we finished the show, actually. But the point is, it hasn't been like... The spin is, oh my God, Romney's having so much trouble closing compared to... four years ago. And the reality is... When you account for the calendar differences and the number of delegates different, everything, right. When you just look at percentages at an equivalent percent through the delegates, yeah, Romney is behind. But he's not crazy behind. You know, and part of that is it's all about the distribution and how things are. You know, we're just now... getting to the point where in 2004, we were right after Super Tuesday in February. So everything just feels really different because we're, because it's so much more spread out, you know. Here we are at the end of March. We're, in terms of what percentage of the way through the race we are, we're at the same place that in 2004 we were at the beginning of February. And
right.
The beginning of February is when McCain last time around suddenly went from being just one of the people running to clearly ahead. Hi, Alex. And you know, and that's because, you know, we went through Super Tuesday and all of a sudden he'd won, you know, a really large percentage. Everybody else was really far behind. You know, that's where we are right now. Alex, you need to be quiet if you're going to stay. Anyway, so that's where we are right now. And Louisiana didn't change anything because... Okay, I'm going to take a quick break while I, you know...
Adjust the situation.
We'll be right back. Yeah, we're not going to play a game right now. Hold on. I'll be back. Okay, I'm here again, sort of. Anyway.
Again.
bottom line with the whole thing... Santorum, you know, won big in quotation marks, but he didn't win big enough to be catching up. You know, at this point, to catch up and win, you know, he needs to be getting 72% of the vote, of the delegates, I should say.
Yeah, that ain't
vote.
Happening.
He needs to his only chance to catch up and win, you know, absent something like Romney dropping out of the race.
Right.
Is, you know...
Now, that would be an incredible move, now that you mentioned that, by Romney. Which, basically, based on all the stupidity this week, would surprise me.
You know, look, that's the kind of level of things, to have one of the non-Romneys actually catch up and win, that would have to happen, is that Romney screws up something major... Yeah, and I'm talking more than, like, one of his aides talking about an episode.
You know, there's got to be, like, a, you know, I don't know, a gay sex video on the internet or something. I mean, you know, something along those lines.
Yeah, something that is so big that Romney has to drop out.
Exactly,
you
right.
know, and look, you know, if I'm thinking...
his campaign aides pregnant, like I don't know, if you know,
but,
like,
but I'm thinking if you listen in on, like, Romney's strategy session right now, it doesn't start with, hey, guys... I'm thinking maybe we drop out.
No, I really have a doubt that that's how they're kicking off the meetings. Yes, no, I don't think that.
You know, so absent that, none of the three non-Romneys can catch up. That's been the case for a long time, to be honest. But what still isn't completely out of the realm of possibility is the three of them together getting enough to block. But even that is pretty damn unlikely right now. If right now the three Romneys together have managed 47% of the delegates. If from now on they got 53% of the delegates, they could block Romney. But, you know, as we've talked about for the last few weeks, you know, in order for them to increase their percentages, at this point it's clear they're not going to win. They have to continue getting votes and continue getting more votes than they have been so far, even though it's clear they're not going to win. That's a really tall order. And again, you may not, in order for this to happen, you may not need Romney to drop out, but you need Romney to completely fuck something up.
Right.
You know, you need him to make some major, major gaffes that cause his support to drop. It's right. not enough for these other guys to pick up a little bit more support, which is very hard for them, given their situation, but Romney himself has to, like, screw something major up and get people, more people than have been so far, saying, you know, I just can't vote for that guy.
And even the Etch-a-Sketch comment wasn't enough. I mean, even though it was just... I mean, that was just... How... I mean, what kind of a rookie dumbass says that? It's just my question. I mean, I'm just... I mean, everybody knows this whole thing about pivoting to the middle, you know, in order to do that, but really? To have one of your fucking aides go right out and just blurt it out like that? I mean, how stupid is that? I mean, I was just like, my God, these guys are just looking for every fucking way to fuck this thing up.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, look, like you said, everybody
knows.
Are they
overconfident?
Yeah, I mean, everybody knows you do the pivot. And, but, you know, the Etch-A-Sketch comment is even more, like, craven. It's like, well, of course, we just reset. Everything's different. We're selling to a different audience, so we have a different message. You know? And that's not, when the narrative about your candidate is already all about the fact that they've changed their minds a lot and they have no solid core positions, you don't want to reinforce that.
Right.
And that's the thing with, like, political gaffes. Like, you know, in general, when people, like, you know, if a candidate misspeaks on something random,
right,
then it's, chances are, that's not going anywhere. Nobody's going to give a crap. It's not going to get any momentum. But if a candidate misspeaks in a way that reinforces some of the narrative that's already around them about what's wrong with them, then that's going to get repeated over and over and over again. And it's going to be part of the picture and something that people remember and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. Like, you know, Romney makes a mistake about saying something that emphasizes again how rich he is. You know,
right.
People talk about it, you know, how many cars he has and that he's friends with the owners of sports teams, you know, blah, 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 blah. You know, he mentions something that's against his narrative and nobody even notices, you know, even if it's a stupid mistake in a different area.
Right.
But anyway, you know, the chance of blocking by the three non-Romneys is frankly relatively low at this point. You know, I'm hesitant to quite yet say it's impossible, but it's getting close. You know, you really need to see a major change in what's going on for even the blocking scenario to be realistic. We long ago left the possibility of any of the three non-Romneys actually winning outright.
Right. That's out.
We're now very close to closing the door on, you know, keeping Romney from getting to 1144. You know, right. Maybe that door's not quite closed yet, but we're damn close.
Well, I don't know. So this week,
I will say, however, we may be damn close, but the calendar once again is not kind. We've got three states on April 3rd. District of Columbia, Maryland, and Wisconsin. Which are all winner-take-all, so those will be fun. But then we don't have anything else till April 24th. You know, and then we have a bunch of states on April 24th. You know, I'd say, you know, April 3rd may be enough to completely take the possibility of not getting to 1144 off the table, because I'm betting anything. Romney will win D.C. and Maryland, and Santorum will win Wisconsin. You know, if Santorum wins Wisconsin too, it's out. It's done. Cooked. Future Sam here. Obviously, I meant if Romney also wins Wisconsin. And in fact, the latest polls, which I saw after we recorded the show, show Romney now ahead in Wisconsin. But assuming Santorum wins Wisconsin, really, it's still not enough. You know, Romney gets the majority for the day by a decent margin. He pulls away. I think April 24th will put any nails in the coffin. We've got Connecticut, Delaware, New York, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island on that day. And that's a lot of delegates. And, you know, I can't imagine, even if Romney wins Pennsylvania, I mean, not Romney, even if Santorum wins Pennsylvania, which he has been significantly ahead in the Pennsylvania polls so far, but we'll see if that holds up if Romney's way, way, way ahead.
Right.
You know? But even if Santorum wins Pennsylvania, Connecticut, Delaware, New York, Rhode Island, those ain't good states for Santorum, I don't think.
I don't know if you saw that this week that, what's his name? Jeb. Bush
yes.
finally gave his endorsement to El Romeo.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's something significant there.
And then you got a bunch of people start talking about, you know, would Jeb be a good vice president?
I don't know if he would like that. I mean, I think it's been, you know, being down here where we see Jeb more often, it really seems like Jeb is not really angling to either run for president or vice president at all. I mean, I may be wrong, but that's the feeling that you get, like, here, okay?
Well, and the thing is, I mean, for him, and a lot of the other people that people were talking about as good Republican candidates who did not run this time around,
mm-hmm.
even if they're interested in doing that someday, they all pretty clearly said 2012 is not the year for right. a Republican.
Right, totally.
Maybe 2016, and we'll right. think about it further on down the line. And I think that applies to a whole bunch of people. I mean, one of the reasons why we've got the Republican field we have is a whole bunch of prominent Republicans that could run for president decided they didn't want to.
Right. Absolutely. Yep.
Which, yeah, to be fair, that's how Clinton got in. All the right. prominent Democrats in 92 said, we're not running. George H.W. Bush is too strong. We would just lose. And guess what? George H.W. Bush had a bad, you know, 1992, and Clinton gets in there. You know.
Right.
So, you know, things can happen. But the other piece of speculation that I put on one of my posts a little while ago was, you know, given the Republicans' history, you know, this is going to be Romney. Santorum's going to be second. Does that mean he's the front runner for 2016?
Don't know. I don't think so. I mean, I got to be honest with you. I really don't think so. I think that Santorum right now is being the front runner.
Assuming Romney doesn't win in the fall, of course.
Yeah, but I mean, come on. I mean, it's just been like, think about how this whole mess has been. I don't think that, you know, who hasn't been front running this fucking Republican race over the last 6 months, for God's sakes, you know? It's not like he was really the number two. It's just been that, I mean, I don't know. The Republicans have been like, oh, gosh, we don't like Romney, so let's vote right now for Gingrich. No. Let's vote for, you know, what was that? Kane. Let's go for the – I mean, it's just been like such a flailing thing. I mean, might as well. Why isn't Gingrich really the front runner as well?
Well, yeah. But, I mean, Gingrich is significantly behind Santorum at this point.
At this point, it is, yeah. But a big part of it was, let's face it, he had no campaign structure compared to even Santorum. I think
Santorum had no structure either.
They were both just as equally disorganized?
Yes.
I thought that Santorum maybe had just a little bit more because remember that Gingrich had his entire staff quit en masse in the summer.
Yes.
I mean, Santorum, you know, for whatever it's worth, I don't recall him having such a massive implosion of his campaign staff.
Right.
Okay, so that's why I've just given him just a little bit ahead, okay, of Gingrich in that respect.
Okay, so let's take a break. I think we've said what we need to say about the main election, except I forgot something that I should have mentioned earlier.
Which is,
and after the break, I'll talk about this. Yesterday, if folks may remember, at the beginning of March, I got elected as a Ron Paul delegate.
Oh, that's right.
The Republican
yes,
side.
You did. Congratulations.
Thank you. out of the, you know, there were three people who showed up in my precinct, and there were three delegate slots, so all three of us became delegates. So,
yeah, well, it's
not. Yeah.
You know, this is why this whole caucus process is just bullshit.
But here's the thing. The next round is next weekend here in Washington State.
Mm-hmm.
But yesterday, I went to a strategy session for the Ron Paul delegates.
Ooh!
So after this break, I'll come back with a brief recap of that. But let's take a break. We'll be back after this.
This is a break, oh yes, this is a break. This is a break, cause no one gave me any suggestions. I told you, I warned you. So this is a break, this is a wonderful break, a wonderful break. Yes, indeed, this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yes, this is a break. Yes, yes, this is a break. Break, 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 break. Yes, 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 this is a break. Yes, this is a break. Break, 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 break. Yes, it is a break. And now, and now, and now, and now the break is over.
Okay, here we are. Look, here's
how... So did you guys, like, exchange the secret handshakes at this meeting or something?
Not quite, but, you know, basically what it was is that, I guess, one of the Ron Paul campaign volunteers from the area gets the list of all the delegates and how they voted their preference, from the Republican Party, and basically sent an email to everybody saying, hey, we're going to have a session... Hold on 1 second. 1 second. Okay, we're fine. We'll have a strategy session. It's not even a strategy session. I mean, it was basically what to expect next week and what we're going to be doing, blah, blah, blah. So they just explained the process to some degree. The meeting next week is an all-day thing. Like... doors open at 9 a.m., but they tell you to get there significantly earlier than that because there'll be lines to register and get in.
And what day of the week is this on?
Saturday.
Okay.
And it's likely to go through 5 p.m.
Okay.
And so the first half of the day is like political speeches. Basically, anybody who's anybody in local politics... local Republican politics is going to give a little speech. So there's going to be hours of just hearing those people go on about whatever they want to go on about.
God.
Okay. And then.
I will admit. Look, I mean, even if it was Democrats for hours going on, I would be. I think that that's got to be boring.
Well,
as
look,
all fucking shit.
I did this 4 years ago on the Democratic side.
Yeah.
And they had the same basic structure. You had all these speeches. And
right.
Yes. Yeah. It had two effects on me. One, it was boring as hell. And two, it put a lot more people on my list of, oh my God, I will never vote for them no matter what. Because this is a partisan meeting. So, like, the bloodthirsty partisan stuff is in full force. So, like... whenever they talk about, it was all about beating the Republicans and how evil the Republicans were, blah, 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 blah. And I'm sure when I go to the Republican version next week, it's going to be the same damn thing in reverse.
Absolutely. It's got to be. Yeah.
You know me, I'm like all, I liked Obama specifically because... he had a lot of centrist stuff and was talking about how reaching out to Republicans and working across the aisle and blah, 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 things like that. This hyper-partisan stuff really turns me off. But if you're at a partisan convention, what the hell do you expect?
Right.
That's what totally. You're going to get.
Agreed.
I anticipate, listening to these speeches and, because, I like a lot of what the Ron Paul stuff team does, but once you're talking about Gingrich and Romney and Santorum and their supporters and blah blah blah, I'm going to be sticking my fingers in my ears, going because anyway, we'll see how that goes. But so after all the speeches come the main meat of the meeting, which is that it divides up by congressional district, or legislative district, I should say. Not congressional district, legislative district. And that's where the next stage of the caucuses actually happen. And where you vote in the delegates to the next round. So, for instance, I'm in the 44th legislative district. There were approximately 260 delegates voted in from the first round that will attend this for the 44th legislative district. We have to vote for 39 people to go on to the next level at the state convention. Now, the way this works is everybody gets a big, huge ballot, and they pick 39 people off that ballot. Now, in order to move on to the next level, you have to have a majority of those a majority of the people voting have to vote for you. And if nobody has a majority, they lop off, you know, anybody who got less than 10% of the vote and do it again.
So you start doing runoffs, basically.
And then they continue that process. But the bottom line is you have to have more than half. Now, so here are the dynamics in my particular district. The Ron Paul folks have about 25% of those delegates.
Wow. Damn.
But now, for any one of those people to be elected to go to the next level, they need 50% of the vote. There's only 25% of Ron Paul people there. So if they all vote for each other, none of them actually get elected to go to the next level. Now, meanwhile, Romney does not have 50%. He has just under 50%. However, there are 15% of the people at this level who officially got there undeclared. If Romney pulls in just a small number of those undeclared people, and they vote a straight Romney slate, and everybody who was a Romney delegate votes a straight Romney slate, and those people, the 39 people that the Romney camp says, please vote for these guys, get more than 50%, then we're done. Romney gets 100% of the delegates from our legislative district. And despite the fact that the real split was like just under 50% for Romney, 25% for Paul. I believe Paul actually came in second, and then close to that number for Gingrich and Santorum. Santorum might have been second. I forget. But anyway, despite that, it is very, very likely that Romney will come out of this process next week with 100% of the delegates.
Wow.
And that's the way it works. And that's, you were saying how caucuses are fair or unfair or whatever. Yet this is why this process is complicated. You know, statewide, you know, there was a certain distribution in the straw poll on the first round, but all of these other rounds have different rules about how you get to the next level. It's not a straight connection going back to the original caucus vote. And so, even though Romney got 50% of the delegates in the first round in this legislative district, he is very likely to come out with 100% in the second. You know, and that's just the way it works. And it's crazy rules. Now, you know, having said that, you know, the insight into the Ron Paul strategy is basically, look, if only the Ron Paul people vote for each other, they're not going to get any delegates. Because none of them will get a majority of the total vote. So the only way that the non-Romneys can get any votes here are for them to vote for each other's delegates. So you have to have some sort of slate that you develop that includes Romney, Santorum, and Gingrich people, and get people from all three camps to vote for those people to have a shot at not letting Romney get all the delegates. And so, of course, they're trying to do something like that and coordinate with the other campaigns and come up with some sort of thing. But in our particular legislative district, the other two campaigns have no organization whatsoever. So the Ron Paul guy was like, you know, I'm going to try to contact a bunch of these people individually, you know. We'll see next week how that strategy works. My best guess is Romney's going to come out of it with 100% of the delegates in my local thing. But we'll see. It'll be fun to go. I told them that I would be happy to be on the Ron Paul slate if he wanted me, but there are people ahead of me in line that are more diehard, so I probably won't be. Meanwhile...
You didn't have, like, blood coming out of your mouth saying, "Ah, Romney, kill him!" No.
Right.
And
although it was a very interesting meeting, a bunch of people talked politics. They were all like, "What can I do to help Ron Paul?" These people were really excited and, you know, talking about... And honestly, you know, one of them even set up, raised their hand and was like, "How many of you other guys here are actually Republicans?" You know, because, you know, a number of them, you know, clearly... had, you know, didn't like any of the other three, and most likely, you know, would not vote Republican if Ron Paul didn't win, which, spoiler, he's not going to. You know, and so that's interesting. Oh, and I should say one more thing about the local. After all of these votes are over, supposedly the convention re-meets to talk about the platform and you submit amendments to the platform and things like that. But apparently the usual reality is that most people leave after the other part and they end up not having a quorum to talk about the platform at all. So it just, you know, whatever draft platform moves forward by default. Because, you know, I mentioned my legislative district is the biggest one in the county. So it'll probably take, you know, if it's not over in the very first shot and Romney wins, it'll probably take more rounds of voting than anybody else. So all these other people will be done and sitting around twiddling their thumbs. And so they'll just leave. And so we won't have a quorum to finish. So anyway, that's my interesting Ron Paul stuff. Any other interest? Oh, one another interesting factor. The leader of the group that was talking about this was talking about how in our district, Mormon support is a huge factor for Romney. But also there was a decent contingent of Romney support in the Paul meeting. This is Future Sam. Obviously, I meant Mormon support in the Paul meeting. But that next week's caucuses happen at the same time as some, you know, important Mormon meeting. So they're wondering if a bunch of the Mormons won't actually show up because they have to go to this church thing instead. And, you know, our leader, the leader of the group was even saying that, you know, look, there's this, you know, the morning part of it is like whatever, but the part in the afternoon is really important. So if it's still going on at 4:30, I'm leaving too.
No, boy.
You know, and so he was predicting that there might be an actual effect that, you know, the numbers that I stated for Romney having almost 50%, Paul having 25, blah, 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 were the results from the first round. What actually happens depends on who shows up. You know, because the delegates who are elected actually have to show up. And if they don't show up, then the alternates take their place, and the alternates were voted on separately, so they have a different mix of preferences than the original delegates. And so who knows what the distribution will actually be. Like, if all the Romney folks are like, ah, we got this done, we don't need to bother to show up, then they might not have a majority after all, just because they don't bother to show up.
Well,
so anyway... complicated stuff, and I generally agree, by the way, that the idea of caucuses is to get people excited about the party and recruit people to be activists and to do stuff, and it may be fine for that, but the in terms of actually being somewhat resembling a democratic process, it really isn't.
It isn't, and that's the one thing I just don't like about them at all. I mean, it is really a very poor way of actually selecting a... I think a running a candidate selection process.
Well, and what it is, I mean, this is essentially, you know, the evolution of the smoke-filled rooms. You know, the primaries were brought on to sort of eliminate the smoke-filled rooms. The caucuses are the remnants of that old system, where, you know, it's not, you know, the people voting for who they want to be a candidate. It's the party deciding who they want to be the candidate through a mechanism controlled by the party. Yeah. So anyway, interesting stuff. I'll probably have more about it next week after I've actually been through it.
But,
yeah, I know. You're probably all asleep. Let's take another break and we'll come back and we'll talk about Trayvon Martin. We'll be back after this.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then, let us begin.
Creepy Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, here we are. Yvonne, Yeah, I followed this a little bit, but it's in your backyard. Give us the rundown of, before we talk about the controversy, give us the rundown of the actual facts. What happened here?
Well, this didn't even happen recently, so let's start off with that. This happened, if I remember correctly, it was around February.
Oh, okay? Really?
Yeah,
the way people are talking about it, you'd think it was last week.
Yeah, I know. And no, it wasn't. It's just that apparently what became public was, I think 911 tapes and some additional information became public, like later. But, there was a Hispanic gentleman, whose name I can't remember right now, who was a neighborhood watch person in this area. I can't remember his name.
Okay.
But I don't want to speculate on it because it's just not ringing a bell right now. But anyway, he was, I believe he's about 28 years old, college student, I believe.
It's George Zimmerman.
Yeah, George Zimmerman. Okay. And he's Hispanic. I don't know. So you heard that name. I'm like, where's he from? So, apparently he was in this neighborhood and he was on watch. He apparently the call, a significant part of what happened was recorded over the telephone. But he sees this person that supposedly is walking suspiciously around the neighborhood. The person's unarmed. So let's start with this. And all the recordings seem to indicate that this guy just went after him just because he looked, you know, suspicious. He had a hoodie, but there was no criminal activity. He's just walking down the street. Yeah, and he was like, look, he said he's looking at stuff suspiciously. The guy didn't have a weapon, so there's nothing threatening, but the guy says that apparently he keeps insisting the guy charged at him, and that's why he shot him. And the whole controversy is really revolving around that there's a law in the state of Florida called Stand Your Ground, which was passed about 4 or 5 years ago, which is stand your ground law has made it very difficult to prosecute people who have shot people in situations that are outside the home, okay? Because they use this law as the claim that the law allows you to claim that you felt threatened, and so therefore you're apparently not required to back off, run, or try to avoid the situation. Apparently that you can stand your ground, you can actually shoot this person and claim that. And so because of this law, this person has not been prosecuted for the shooting.
Right. And so basically, you know, the way that works, as I understand it, is like in other states, you know, if you're going to claim self-defense or something, you basically have to show you had no other option.
That's exactly right.
You know,
and in Florida, you don't.
You don't have to show you had no other option. Like the fact that you could have turned around and left the situation is not good enough. It says you don't have to do that. You don't have to run away. You don't have to, avail yourself of other nonviolent options that may be available. If you feel threatened, you can go ahead and shoot them.
That's exactly right.
Now, I will add to this, by the way, that apparently part of what was going on here, the guy, when he was on watch, he was in his car, and he noticed that the guy was, you know, being suspicious or whatever he was saying. He called 911.
Right.
And 911 was saying, you know,
back off.
911 was like, we're sending an officer over to investigate. You know, you don't have to do anything more. And then the guy's on the phone saying, you know, I think he knows he's I'm following him. And the police are like, sir, are you following him? We don't need you to follow him. Please don't follow him. You know, and then so you can easily see it from the other side. You know, I'm walking down the street at night. A car starts following me closely.
Right. What the hell are you going to do?
Behind me. I'm going to get scared about what the car's going to do to me. Why the hell are they following me? You know, are they after me? Are they going to run over me? Are they about to, like, rob me? What's going on? You know, so I could completely understand being in that position and sort of turning around and heading towards the car to say, what the hell's up, dude? Why are you following me? And then there's your threatening move. Bam.
Right.
You know, and so, again, the cops were telling him, back off, don't follow him. And he did anyway.
Right.
Okay, go ahead.
And that's,
go
ahead. And, no, and so that's where the controversy is lying. And, well, here's the problem. The chief of police and the police and the DAs, they have refused to indict this person because citing the stand your ground law. And this has basically generated massive amounts of protest here locally and in Orlando, the Orlando area regarding this. It's gotten to a point right now the chief of police has actually stepped aside, in the town. The governor of the state of Florida right now has decided to launch a review of the Stand Your Ground law and the incident that's happened here. There's a federal investigation right now on the incident, regarding this right now, in terms of were there any civil rights issues involved. And so that's where we are right now. And it's just, I think that there's been a number of incidents in the state with the Stand Your Ground law. And, you know, just this one. Apparently, that town has been a town that has had a lot of racial tension between Hispanics and blacks over the years. And this is just, you know, this incident is just, you know, way too much. Because, you know, from everything that you could, that's been presented about the kid, it wasn't like this was some kid that was a lawbreaker that was in trouble all the time. You know, what are these guys, you think that's going to do something. None of the evidence indicates that at this point.
And that's where you get like Geraldo saying, he shouldn't have been wearing a hoodie, essentially.
He's a fucking moron. I mean, you know, somebody was pointing out, I mean, let's face it, I don't know, you know, somebody was pointing out, Mark Zuckerberg works a fucking hoodie. Bill Belichick, the coach of the
Patriots. Well, of course, people have started, you know, posting pictures of Geraldo wearing hoodies.
Yeah, I mean, it's fucking bullshit. I mean, what the hell? Why? Because you're walking around with a hoodie? That's a reason to get shocked? What, are you fucking kidding me?
His point, which he made badly, was simply that, you know, what you wear and how you look is something that people will take, unjustifiably, but people will take as a signal and an indicator. And, you know, a black kid walking down the street in a hoodie, certain people are going to come away from seeing that, feeling that that is in and of itself threatening. The same kid, you know, walking down the street wearing like some preppy outfit would not be viewed the same way.
It's
reality. It's not a good reality. That's not necessarily how it should be.
But it's garbage anyway. Yeah. I mean, it's just fucking garbage. I mean, the guy was unarmed. There was no reason to do so. The police is fucking telling him on the damn phone, fucking back off the guy, for God's sakes. Yep. And he still goes and fucking like chases him and shoots him. I mean, come on.
I agree with you completely. the point of caution there is, you know, when you wear something, be aware that people do make their impressions based on it. But having said that, he could be wearing, you know, a gang outfit with a signboard that says, you know, if you come near me, I will shoot you. And that's still not justification to shoot the kid.
To go shoot him!
You know?
That's right!
You know, I am very reluctant of, I mean, I understand self-defense defenses in general, but I think there needs to be a pretty damn high bar for that, you know, and I'm not a fan of, you know, people just walking around with guns anyway, because that turns what could be, you know, if nobody in this situation had a gun, nothing would have happened. Two guys may have had a fight. They may have exchanged words. Maybe in a worst case scenario, some punches would fly.
Right.
Nobody would be dead.
That's right. I totally agree. Nobody would have been fucking dead. I mean, I don't know.
I've heard reports too that the guy who did the shooting, after he realized what he had done, has been incredibly distraught about the whole thing, upset. You know, obviously sorry that it happened, wishes that he hadn't done what he did. And I sort of feel for that too. I mean, if you're in a situation where you think you're being threatened, you shoot somebody and then you realize there was no threat there. You just shot and killed an innocent person. I can understand how, you know, that would devastate you, but you kind of put yourself in that position.
Yes. I mean, he's the one that fucking set this whole thing up. I mean,
and, he was and, being... you know, and I, you know, I'm not sure of the legalities of the Stand Your Ground law. I've seen a number of people saying it actually doesn't apply in this situation, but the defense, of course, says it does. It should play out in court. You know, they should charge the guy and then, you know, let the court system decide what the appropriate thing is. I suspect that, you know, this is would be somewhere in between. It's not nothing. The guy shouldn't be not charged at all, but it's also not the same as a cold-blooded premeditated murder. It's, you know, I can understand the, you know, the justification that the punishment should probably be a lot less than that because, you know, his intentions weren't as bad as they could have been, but he still shot and killed an innocent person. At the absolute best scenario here is utter negligence on his part and bad judgment. And that's the absolute best scenario. If you add in, well, you know, other stuff, you know, maybe he was doing it for racial motivation, blah, 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 as some other people are stating. I'm not sure that's the case. But if you put that stuff in, maybe it's a little bit worse, but it's still not quite, you know, the same as an out, you know, cold-blooded murder. It's somewhere in between. But they should be charging this guy with something. Something should be happening in the courts. It shouldn't just be, oh, well, we're not even going to arrest the guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's the and that's the thing. I mean, he hasn't even been arrested. Nothing has happened. And, you know, everybody's like saying, I mean, dude, this guy basically chased the guy down. It wasn't the other way.
Right.
It's not like this guy was like going down and like all of a sudden bumped into him. He started, you know, start threatening him. Not at all. That's why, you know, that's why I think a couple of people are arguing the whole thing about why this freaking like the Stand Your Ground law doesn't apply. Because, you know, it wasn't
because he
like,
was following.
Right. He was the one doing the following, not the other way around.
Right.
So, anyway, we'll see how this plays out. But it's very unfortunate that, I don't know, that happened. So,
yep.
We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. I mean, I can't even imagine if I was this kid's family. Yeah, how I feel. But,
yeah.
Okay, let's take a break. We have a little bit of Apple stuff, a little bit of Cheney stuff, and then we'll wrap it up. We'll be back after this exciting message.
You're in the Valley, AM 1620 and LiganAirRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now.
Come on, baby. Let's do the twist.
Well, they got a new dance and it goes like this.
I hit the radio dial and turn it up all the way.
I got a dance.
Classic music for a classic American town, AM 1620, and in stereo at LiganAirRadio.com, The Valley.
Okay, Apple stuff. The
Apple, Apple!
And you had some bat stuff as well.
Well, Apple...
Okay, go ahead.
The Apple stuff was related... There was... okay, there is these... There's the stock... look, right now...
Before you talk about the weird stock stuff...
Right.
A couple minutes on, you know, yes. Apple doing something with their cash. They're giving a dividend.
Okay, they decided to finally issue a dividend in order to...
Because they only have $100 billion in the bank.
Right. So they're going to use... So they're going to do two things. They're going to use... They're going to issue a dividend of basically about $10 billion a year. Okay? Which, by the way, doesn't even, like, take... You know, just sniffs at this. They're not even starting on the dividend until the fourth quarter of the year. By the way, all right. So it's not even like they're starting.
And they're only taking it out of their American cash. They're not touching their overseas.
Right. They're not touching the overseas cash. So that's one thing.
And based on all estimates, by the way, even with giving away this cash, given what they've got and how they've been doing, they will probably continue to accumulate cash faster than they give it out through the dividend. So they won't necessarily actually be drawing down their cash reserve.
Right.
Just slowing down its growth.
The other part that they're doing is they committed to a $10 billion stock buyback that happens over 3 years. And the main reason for that is because they want – I mean right now they had issued quite a lot of employee stock options, and that had been increasing the number of shares outstanding of Apple when they've been doing that. And the only reason for that is just to maintain the number of shares outstanding of Apple at around roughly the same amount. Okay? So it's not like – you know, so I mean it's not – it's – it's significant simply in the change that they actually decided to do a dividend. But, I mean, how earth-shattering is it? It's not really that much money, as I expected, to be honest with you. I figured that they would go out at first and, like, do, like, what Microsoft did years ago, where they declared, like, when they were holding, like, 70 or 80 billion, they wrote a check for 35 or 40 billion out. Just said, here you go, boom. Let me do, like, one shot. But that's not what they decided to do. So, you know, so anyway, so they did do that. But sometime during the week, okay, something batty happened in the stock market, okay? We talked about a couple of, you know, what was it, a year and a half ago or so, we're talking about he had this flash crash.
Yes.
Right, okay? And nobody, after months and months of investigating, nobody could figure out what the fuck happened, right? So, well,
To remind people, this was an incident where within the scope of a few minutes, there was a huge drop in all kinds of different stocks, and then a few minutes later, they all recovered back to where they were.
Exactly. And nobody could figure out why it happened. And we're talking about massive companies. I think, you know, that dropped from like $25 a share to pennies, okay? All right? Pennies, okay? Immediately. So, sometime on Thursday, look, right now, there isn't only the New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ as the only exchanges where you can trade shares. There's multiple different trading platforms that are out there. And one of them happens to be called BATS. Okay, all right? And I can't remember what the hell BATS stands for right now. But it's a platform that started sometime in 2005 that is used for, you know, for stock trading. Okay? So, anyway, these guys were a privately owned company. Okay? And they decided they were going to do an IPO of the company, okay? They wanted to go public, okay? So they launched their IPO sometime this week. Well, something really bad happened with the IPO because within seconds of them launching their IPO, their own stock price for the stock exchange dropped from the $16 a share that they opened at to 0.002.
0.002 cents or dollars?
Dollars.
Okay.
Okay? So 0.02 cents. Okay? In a matter of seconds.
Wait.
As this happened...
I think you missed an O there, but it doesn't really matter. Go ahead.
Let me look at it again. It was.
No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It went to almost zero.
It was below a penny. Okay? Bottom line. Okay? It was just... It's the value evaporated. Okay? And it happened in seconds. At the same time that happened, all of a sudden, some trades started going goofy. Okay? On stocks with symbols between A and BZZZ, I think it was, okay? All right? Okay? Between those. And one of them happens to be Apple. All of a sudden, Apple, those ones dropped in 1 second, like 10% on a couple of trades. And we're like, what the fuck? And everybody just – and actually, immediately as that happened, because Apple's so big, they halted trading on Apple. They were like, what the fuck is going on? And then they found that they were, like, related to BATS. BATS tried to relaunch their own IPO multiple times the same day. Same shit kept happening. At the end of the day, BATS decided, I guess we can't do it. They pulled the IPO. Done. They didn't go public. Which is the first time, by the way,
that's
happened.
But what about those people who bought it at less than a penny?
They canceled all the trades. All the trades.
Sucks to be those people.
Yes, because those people thought, I'm sure, I own it! I bought the whole company! I did it! No, you didn't. Would have been nice, but, you know, no, it didn't happen. So, anyway, so now everybody is, like, going and, like, you know, going back to, well, fuck, is this the source of what happened in the fucking, like, flash crash? What the hell's going on? The guys at BATS still can't figure out what the hell happened, okay, why this whole happened. Nobody still understands why this massive failure happened. I mean, you want to talk about embarrassing. I mean, it happened on their own IPO of themselves.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah, not really, how do I say, confidence-inspiring. And so, you know, but it's just, you know. But all the stock, but all the trades and all those transactions, they all got canceled. So nobody got the mega deal of the century. So, but Apple got somehow caught in it, and they unwound the trades. Now we'll see if they can figure out what the hell happened. But it's just, I mean, I like the price how it went down. I love that point Yeah, it was like point. It was like either three zeros or four zeros. I can't remember. It was small.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. I don't think that they expect that their price to collapse that quickly. Here, I'm pulling up the price right now just to double check it. But
well, the thing that all of this brings up, as did the flash crash before, and has several other events in the past, is that when you have sort of, you know, none of this stuff is done by humans anymore.
No, it's not.
They're layer upon layer upon layer upon layer of automation.
Right.
And you've got multiple points of potential failure.
That's right.
You've got, you know, a weird software glitch that does something weird to all stocks that begin with the letter B.
Right.
Or A or B, like this one.
Yeah, from A to B, Z, 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 right.
Right. You know, you've got weird software glitches that, you know, some programmer somewhere probably misplaced a semicolon.
Right.
You know? Probably something more elaborate than that. But, you know, something really simple that was hiding and is a bug and comes up under some obscure situation and kaboom! And then you've also got, you know, the automated, you know, hyper-frequency trading.
Right.
Which is why this platform tries to make money on price changes that last less than a second, you know? And between these things, you've just got a recipe for something at some point in time just going kaboom.
So let me read you the exact numbers how it traded. So at 11:14 a.m., trades from the opening auction of BATS shares were reported to the Stock Market Central tape, showing 1.2 million shares changing hands at 15:25, which is a little bit below the price. Okay, at 11:14, within 9/10 of a second from that opening, okay, BATS stock had fallen to about 28 cents, 9/10 of a second. All right, then, according to Nanex, it's not within 1.5 more seconds. Okay, the price bottomed at fractions of a dollar, 0.002.
Right. So 1/5 of a penny. Are you stumped by that math, Yvonne? Yvonne.
Please hang up and try again.
Ah, hello.
Hello.
Okay.
Sounds like we have Yvonne back.
Okay. Perfect.
So we were talking, and then you were gone.
I don't know what the fuck did I say last.
I think you were about done. You were talking.
Yeah, about... I was about done, and I tried to start talking about Cheney.
Ah. Well, I guess we could switch topics and move on and do Cheney real fast before wrapping up. He got a new heart.
Well,
what is there else to say?
Well, my question, this game a little bit, you know, I mean, we talked about transplantation because Steve Jobs, you know, him getting a transplant. Yep. I just found it a little bit, like, strange myself that he was eligible at age 71, especially with his history of, like, I mean, basically.
I have seen a few comments that it's far more typical for people above 65 to be considered ineligible for this kind of operation, simply because the amount of time that they have left, even with a new organ,
heart,
you know, heart or liver or whatever, it, you know, isn't that long, you know, and, you know, it's sort of like, I mean, on the one hand, you're like, hey, it'd be nice to save everybody and give everybody everything possible, blah, blah, blah. But organs are in severely short supply in general. And so these lists are prioritized. And they're usually prioritized by the degree of illness, but also going into the factor is, you know, is the person otherwise healthy? You know? So I don't know if there were any shenanigans here. I don't know if there was a Steve Jobs thing where he could pick
I wasn't
state.
Claiming one of those. I mean, I was just actually, you know, curious as to how you become eligible at that age. I mean, let's face it, my father is around that age, and if he was that ill and, you know, I mean, he could be saved by a heart transplant, I'd be going, doing anything possible to get him one.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I thought about it a little bit. Yeah, you know, taking out Chaney, that it is Chaney out of the equation. I mean, I'm like, yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, if it's my father too, I'd be, you know, doing everything possible to get a heart transplant at that age. I was just actually curious as to, I guess, how the rules of being eligible for one are at this stage, I guess. It just popped that question into my mind, I guess. So.
And I don't know. I mean, I assume everything was above board. But
I mean, I would assume.
But I also assume that any additional leverage that he could apply due to his position, wealth, everything else, was certainly going to be a factor. I mean, we talked about when the Steve Jobs case, he was able to put himself, you know, on the list in a whole bunch of different states, knowing that he was in a position where if one came available, he could be on his private plane in an hour going to wherever he needed to go. That a lot of people just aren't in the position to be able to do that. So he was able to, you know, I believe it was Kentucky in the Steve Jobs case, get a liver that, you know, he never would have made it to that liver if he had to wait on the California list. You know.
So it says here, I'm reading, there was an article, I just did a quick search. There was an article a couple of months ago regarding that on the Wall Street Journal, because they talked about him getting the heart transplant before he got it. And it says here, the guidelines say that generally speaking, heart transplants are considered an option for eligible patients age 70, age and under. Chaney just turned 70, according to this, right? When was this written? Well, this is actually written in 2011, so it's been a little bit older than that.
Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily mean he has to make a decision in the next year, because the guidelines also say that carefully selected older patients may also be considered.
Okay.
Older patients in general can do well as the younger patients, at least in the short term. This is from a doctor who is a specialist in this. But over time, obviously, they are more likely than young ones to experience the other diseases that may kill them, he says. But I guess, yeah, I mean, I guess if you go through a certain level of screening, and apparently at Cedars-Sinai, the oldest patient was a 77-year-old,
okay,
that received a heart transplant. So there you go.
I mean, so I guess it's just a factor in if he's otherwise, besides his heart, if everything else is working okay and blah, 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 and who knows what other factors they put in. Yeah, okay.
And I'm sure probably also is a match, I guess, because maybe other younger patients are looking for a heart, but there's no match, and it may be that there's a heart that matched him that probably wouldn't fit anybody who was younger in the first place. So, I mean, if you happen to miss the criteria, then why waste the heart? I mean, I would think. I mean,
oh, absolutely. And that is how it works. I mean, it's the highest person on the list that's a match. You know, so it doesn't necessarily mean the first person on the list gets the next heart. Because depending on the organ, how tricky it is to find a match is different. I don't know about a heart. Like, it may be fairly easy to find a heart match. I don't know. But, you know, certain things like bone marrow or whatever are very hard to find matches.
Right.
You know,
right.
And so it really depends. But anyway, I guess, you know, Dick Cheney gets a little more
time. We'll have Dick Cheney around to kick around for a while longer, I guess.
Had noted, by the way, that as his health was deteriorating over the last few years, he had become, you know, a bit less public, which is to be expected, but also a bit less combative and spending more of his time on, less controversial issues, with some exceptions. Like, if you remember a little while ago, he was actually lobbying for gay marriage in Maryland. And people found that interesting, but it's an area where he has privately opposed the position in the rest of his party for a while. You know, he's got a lesbian daughter, and apparently that had an effect on him. But he was actually lobbying various people in gay marriage battles a couple months ago to legalize gay marriage. So he's an interesting character, to say the least. You know, there are very strong arguments to be made that he is a war criminal, though. You know, given some of the stuff he's advocated and done. But, of course, you know, he's in the kind of position that
there'll never be a test of that. He's never going to be brought to trial for anything, you know. But there are cases to be made. But and I'm not sure how that would go. But anyway, an interesting character. I think we're done.
Definitely. We're done. We're out.
And for those of you wondering, Yvonne sounds different because he's now on his phone as opposed to on his regular internet connection because his connection died, which is what knocked him off before.
Right.
Your super stable internet there, huh?
Yeah, I guess so. Jeez, you know, what the hell?
Okay, well, we're done. Thank you for joining us again for yet another episode of Curmudgeon's Corner. As usual, email me at abelsme@abelsme.com with any questions, comments, thoughts. That's A-B-U-L-S-M-E. We'd be glad to hear from you. And
I will say something about my internet connection. In the near future, I am having fiber laid directly into our buildings. Okay, all right. So I would think that after, you know, they're digging around right now putting that. So once that happens, I think I would hope that it's going to be a lot more reliable. So
we'll see.
All right.
And thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Twitter us, tweet us, Facebook us.
Twit us.
Next week. Goodbye.
Twit us.
Twit?
Yep.
What? Where?
Yeah, twit. Yes.
Yeah. Whatever. Twit. Whatever you could pin us on Pinterest.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, there you go.
Or get us an Instagram. Who knows? Anyway, all right. Okay. Sayonara. Goodbye.
Goodbye.